Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport.
Hello, thanks very much for tuning in this week to The Ball Bags podcast. As usual, it is myself, the Sasquatch, and the Chief. How are you, my fine sir?
I'm good, Sasquatch. Friday Eve, looking into a bank holiday weekend, Paddy's weekend. What more could you ask for?
Maybe a win against England. Maybe that was the only thing
that
could save us. But very much on the Friday Eve vibe myself. And yet another intriguing weekend of sport, which that's why we're here. That's why we waffle down the mics to you on a weekly basis. But at this stage, if you've tuned in, you know. If you haven't, if you're tuning in for the first time, kind of run through a fairly simple enough structure. We do our player of the weekend from last weekend. We both bring a talking point, agree, disagree. And then we finish up with what we believe you must sit down and watch this weekend. So to kick it all through, Chief, who's your player of the weekend and why?
Rather unpatriotic of me, I've gone with Ben Earl. Fair. I just thought he was phenomenal against Ireland last week. Big carries, got a try. Like he's a quality number eight, and he's the size of a player that is rarely produced in Ireland. He's the players that causes damage to Ireland when we don't have that same size to back it up. Joe McCarthy's had a very good Six Nations up until the England game, whether he was overawed or just he was double teamed, he was targeted. He didn't have the impact that he's had in the previous three games and stuff like that. But Ben Earl, he was serious ball in hand player. His carries were, destructive, and defense, he was there.
Yeah. He is, I suppose, when I watch him, to further on your point, I do think he's a few inches shorter, all right, but he does kind of bring back images of Pierre Spies, particularly in that Lions tour all those years ago. He definitely gives me flashbacks. He did have a phenomenal game. If you were to remain neutral and professional as a pundit, you would say he's a phenomenal game, and he did, to be fair. I've not strayed too far from you. I've gone with one Ignacio Brex, Italian centre. I think he actually got man of the match, but look, historic win for Italy on the weekend. They've had, I would make the argument that regardless of the result against Wales in the weekend, they've had their best ever Six Nations. Lost England by 3 points, albeit they come in against off the boil against us, maybe inflated our egos following what we'd done to France the weekend prior. We're obviously 6 inches away from beating France, finish up with a draw, and then obviously beat Scotland in a high scoring game, which traditionally, I suppose, in the past is not maybe how you'd expect Italy to win. You would kind of expect a drab affair. I thought he in particular was fantastic. And look, there's real, maybe it's a team award and I'm just singling one out, but that game was incredible. You look at the pieces that are coming through, maybe not produced in Italy, fair to say, that back three of Digby Ioane,
Louis Leina and Caputo,
fairly electric, all offer kind of different strengths to their game and stuff, and it does seem to be starting to come together for Italy. So,
I think. And you look at their under-20s performances the last number of years, there's actually a bit of a production line coming through. So they've a very good age profile of very good players coming through. And you see how Benetton have been playing this year. Zebre have obviously massively improved. They're still only on, I think, one or two wins, but
closer.
They've had so many 4-try bonus points in defeats and stuff this year. It's like they've picked up loads of bonus points, and it seems to be clicking. And like a performance like last weekend should close all conversation of kick Italy out of Six Nations. And we probably touched on it a little bit, you know, like after the World Cup, the drumming that they took from France and New Zealand and stuff. It's like it didn't click for them at the World Cup, but it certainly has now. And had they been a bit more clinical against England and that ball going over against France, you're looking at potentially picking up a fourth win this weekend. And that, it's huge for them, you know. And like, as you say, regardless of the result, it's been a phenomenal Six Nations for them. I think Brex, I'm going to call it now. I'm going to give you the win for Brex, as the player of the week. I think him and Menoncello in the center,
yes,
are a serious partnership. They could potentially be to Italy what O'Driscoll and Darcy were to Ireland, or
what Bergamasco and Bergamasco were.
Yeah, that crazy second or back row scrum half, Bergamasco.
Oh, curly.
But yeah, I think Ben Earl was huge for England, and he was a very big part of their game plan that stopped Ireland. It wasn't like, there's certain things you can take out of it. England did not let Ireland play at the weekend, and Ben Earl was part of that. But I think for the context of it, Italy beating Scotland, Brex is, yeah, definitely. I'll give you that one as a win.
That was pretty easy. So I suppose the main segment is obviously agree, disagree. Chief, what have you got for us?
So this one came to me in the aftermath of Anton Frisch getting a
came
call.
Came to me in a dream.
In a dream. Anton Frisch getting a call from Fabien Galthié to come into the French squad, which he has since been released from. But had he been capped, or if he's called up in the summer and capped in the summer for France, it will make him non-Irish qualified. And will be the third player in 18 months, about 12 to 18 months, that Munster in particular will have lost to other nations. It's very biased here, but my point is, are the IRFU and ultimately Andy Farrell overlooking new talent for the national squad, but also, are they hurting the province's ability to retain that talent as to become non-Irish qualified? There's several examples for Munster, but it has happened with Leinster as well. Like, Ross Maloney seems to be off the bat. Is he going to get caps? Probably not. He's 29, 30 in a very key position where it seems to be settled enough in the second row, and a couple of bolters with the likes of Ahern and stuff coming through. But another Leinster example was Vak Abdeladze, the Tighead prop. He played all his school's rugby in Ireland and came through the Leinster youths and academy and stuff, Georgian national, and got capped by them last year. So he had to move from Leinster because they had Alatoa as their non-Irish qualified Tighead. So it just means, you're losing that talent, you know, to other tier one nations. So, Ben Healy and John Klein both played for Scotland and South Africa, respectively, at the last World Cup. And potentially you could be looking at Frisch now, you know. And there's other players that have the possibility of, through their parents, of playing for other nations, if not called up by Ireland. So it's, you know, it's just, is there harm being done to the provinces and the national squad as a whole?
So there's two elements to this, and I don't think you're going to like one of them. The first point is, like, are you potentially devaluing an international cap to just cap someone that, worst case scenario, we have them? Like, for me, I'm very happy with the concept of Ben Healy never being capped for Ireland. I think he would be, had he stayed in Ireland, he would probably be fifth choice. Now, that's in a world where the Burns are put in front of him, and I don't agree with that either. But regardless, so do you devalue a cap just to cap someone who might switch? And then, to my knowledge, Ben Healy is Irish. He just has a Scottish grandparent.
Yeah, I think it's either Scottish grandparent or parent. But yeah, he's Tipperary. Like, he's as country as we are. Like, you know.
So, he made the decision based on the premise that he knew he was never going to play for Ireland. Because I don't think an Irish man, or any man, shuns their nation to go and play. And then you bring up, like, say, the John Klein example. We did him on residency. He played for Ireland. And then he wasn't good enough for us for four years. And then, look, he was good enough. He went and won a World Cup. Arguments can be made to be overlooked something. Do I think he was an important factor in South Africa winning the World Cup? I don't. The more difficult element I would make is, I fully comprehend the concept of, are we devaluing the provinces? And I do get it. I think Munster have been particularly hard done by in recent months and years. But I think there's an element where we might need to look at provincial pathway systems in this country and kind of be a little bit harsher on them. Leinster rugby and the Irish rugby team is propped up by the Leinster Senior Cup.
Oh, massively. Massively, and yeah.
That is a competition that the IRFU, the Leinster branch, don't really have any involvement in. As in, like, that would work in silo. That would work if the IRFU and Leinster rugby fell asunder in the morning. That would continue to operate as normal, untouched. And it had done hundreds of years before. Well, not hundreds of years, but 100 years probably prior to the induction of the Irish Rugby Football Union. So you'd look around and you kind of go, is there enough development work being done in clubs around the country to develop talent? And should we demand more of our governing bodies in rugby in this country to ensure that it's as equal a chance that if you go to a public school as you go to a private school, that you can play rugby for your country? And I'm not saying that's going to happen overnight, but in 40 years' time, we could be on a level playing field, and that's kind of the work that kind of has to start.
Yeah, we'd ideally like to get more situations of the Sean O'Briens and the Tadhg Furlongs coming through. They're just too few and far between. To go back to Frisch, though, like a starter, like his mother is Irish. You know, he's the starting outside centre for Ireland. Like, you, the centre depth in the Ireland squad, the extended squad, is one outside centre and three inside centres that can maybe play 13. And it's like, Gary Ringrose was injured for the first four rounds. He probably could have made the bench against England and probably should have. But knowing that he was injured, using someone like Frisch, it could be Jamie Osborne. Like, it doesn't have to be Frisch. Like, obviously, I'm a little bit biased. But Frisch is a guy who's starting for Munster in Heineken Cup games. Potentially, like, James Hume is one that's been overlooked as well, because his form has dipped. But that's because he's in a bad Ulster side. And you know, but one of the issues is like a fourth or fifth choice Leinster player, because it's the system is called up into the squad. I think like when Munster and Connacht and Ulster identify these Irish qualified players to come and sign, there is the carrot, you could get into the national squad, but they don't even seem to be receiving phone calls or you need to work on this or you do this, or like it seems a very closed group, you know. Like Crowley was an exception, that he broke into the squad when he did, and that was probably due to the fact that Carberry had, like, actually when Crowley got called up, Carberry was probably in his best form for a number of years for Munster and stuff. So there doesn't seem to be much scope for players to break into the squad outside of the initial. And, you know, it's just, everyone will argue, it's like, I want this player because he plays for my team or whatever. It's like, but it's what's in the national interest. Bring these guys in and see how they react in camps and stuff. We don't seem to be doing that a lot.
And I'll tell you, and look, I know a lot of people will go on about fixture congestion, but something I don't think it's done anymore, but used to be kind of an iconic fixture you'd look forward to watching on the telly years ago. I think ITV used to actually cover it. The All Blacks used to do probables versus possibles. So they would bring back last year's touring team and they would bring back anyone on the precipice. And they'd just play like almost a State of Origin style one-off game. Probables in black, possibles in white, whatever. And that was televised. That brought in a huge crowd. I don't know when you'd squeeze it in, mind. There's arguments that...
Yeah, no, go ahead.
When you'd need it in the European calendar would probably be January, and the fixture list is very congested then because you're going into the Six Nations. But, geez, I wouldn't mind it if you could squeeze it in towards the end of the season for the summer tour, and then you got the player into the squad. You'll take a lump on him, and it's on him to...
Make it work. Yeah, to prove himself, I think... If we could get back to like Ireland A fixtures, you know, it's something that hasn't been done in a long time. Like the Emerging Ireland tour to South Africa, like, was like Frisch was on that. Tom Ahern, like, there's very few of those guys that tour was designed for have had any more opportunity to break into the squad. So maybe. Bring back the A fixtures, play the US and Canada with those teams, and rest your senior guys, established guys. Like France are going to Argentina this summer. When they're traveling, I think the top 14 finals are kind of on, so they're going to be missing a lot of their star talent. And it's opportunity for new players, which again, Frisch could be called back up at that stage again, so we don't know. But they're willing to try, where I just, like, Keenan got shifted onto the wing to accommodate Frawley, and it took Keenan's strengths away from him, his defensive blitz and stuff, and because Frawley doesn't offer the same. Frawley, don't get me wrong, I do rate Frawley, he's a very good player, victim of his own ability to play, play multiple positions and stuff. I know you can't count for things happening so early in the game, but that changed. But like, if you had another specialist fullback in or around the squad that could cover, no one's going to cover exactly like Hugo Keenan, but if you have someone that is a specialist fullback that, okay, he's not in the match day at 23, but if he's injured again, he's running the reps and stuff at training, that it should be seamless enough to get him into the team. without affecting too much. So maybe the hope that Frawley could do that, and it didn't work last weekend. But again, I give credit to England for it not working, as opposed to
yeah,
like there's no individual blame on it. Yeah.
No. Well, yeah, maybe Andy.
Okay. The 6-2 probably is wrong. I don't know
if he picked that bench again. I know there were head injuries and stuff like that, but even I don't know if I agree with that 6-2 split. Regardless. But look, the buzzer did go. But you're waffling on about Munster and I didn't want to upset you. Did you want to take me off one stage? I'm only joking. Fair. Right, I have a kind of a bit of a two-parter. Still oval ball, just other side of the Atlantic. So, during the week, can't remember what it was, Tuesday or Wednesday, was day one of the NFL free agency. And it was absolutely wild, particularly at the running back position. So I've gone through a few of the heavy hitters and I've omitted some, such as the list of running back transfers so far, but the first question I have for you, Chief, is of the below, who is potential to be the most influential based on their landing spot? So Derrick Henry at Baltimore, Saquon Barkley at Philly, Josh Jacobs in Green Bay, Aaron Jones in Minnesota, Joe Mixon, Houston, DeAndre Swift, Chicago, Tony Pollard, Tennessee, and Austin Eckler in Washington.
I'd like to say that
really is a who's who of round one draft picks.
Yeah, I'd like to say DeAndre Swift is going to be the absolute best and most influential there. He is going to be influential at Chicago. Like he's going to improve that team anyway. Again, biased, but like you know, as an Eagles fan, like he's what he can offer. It's probably a good fit. It might not be a good fit personally for him, but Chicago should make it work. It's a good piece to get for them. Maybe guaranteed a little bit too much money for him. But
I get that part too.
I think
a trend too.
Looking at the list, I'm excited to see what Derrick Henry can do at Baltimore. But also Saquon Barkley at the Eagles. I think the two of them, with the right pieces, Baltimore don't need many more pieces, to be honest, but Derrick Henry, I think Henry at the Ravens that's probably who I'm looking at to having the most influence there and possibly push them on to maybe that championship ring next year.
Well, they get over the hump. Go over the hoodoo. It's a strange one for me. I think, surprisingly enough, in their individual landing spots, the most influential probably actually end up being Aaron Jones in Minnesota, because they are now quarterbackless or rookie quarterback situation. I like DeAndre Swift in Chicago, because either way, it's a very mobile Justin Fields with a very mobile running back, so it's good to take off some pressure off him, or it's Caleb Williams and it's a rookie quarterback and you want an experienced running back. Derrick Henry's Baltimore is exceptional too. Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley will win the quarterback running back squat competition, but it's interesting. You would have loved to have seen Saquon Barkley with potentially the greatest center of the last 20 years. And sadly, he has retired. But look, it's still a good O-line. So,
I think Jason tweeted out the other day. He was liking the pieces that were being put together, and he's like, "Oh, I'd like to play on that team." Or is he reconsidering his retirement?
One more year. No, we'll hear it by the podcast if he makes a decision. Austin Eckler. Someone tweeted out that the Washington Commanders are putting a side together to win the 2018 Super Bowl. It's a bit of a strange one, all right. I can't believe the Cowboys let go of Tony Pollard.
That was a strange one. I didn't think they'd get rid of him this year, or, you know, like, not offer him to one more year to, again, to try and get over their hump. Good piece for Tennessee. I really don't know much about Joe Mixon, to be honest.
I think he's over the hill, to be honest with you.
Obviously, as I said, Derrick Henry to Baltimore, but yeah, I think Aaron Jones there to the Vikings could be a good bit of business.
Could be the most influential for that side. Whether it's influential this season, I don't know. But there is a second part to the question, I suppose, and the reason I'm bringing it up is, I don't know if you recall, but last summer we had X amount of running backs, many of which you'll see in this list I called out, who were in contract negotiations. And the general consensus around the league was that it was not worth paying at the running back position. Attrition was too much. Why would you bother doing it? You just draft the guy next year. And you kind of want to keep your running back on a rookie contract. This year, we seem to have completely flip-flopped. Free agency, as you touched on with DeAndre Swift, a lot of these running backs looked like they were given exceptional contracts. And it's just how quickly the landscape changed. I suppose the question I was going to ask you, Chief, is, with that in mind, is the NFL, and I'm going to throw in a wider landscape here, professional sport, is it too like copycat or trend-based that no one seems comfortable breaking the mold? And then the minute someone does, let's all break the mold. And that's the new mold.
Yeah, very quickly. I think there is that hesitancy to, so like last year, like these have all become free agents, obviously, because no one, their own teams didn't back them last year. So it's like, okay, we're finishing out our contracts. Now they've been rewarded with some pretty good contracts. Like, I think DeAndre Swift's contract at Chicago, $24 million for 2 years. And I think that could be the guarantee. I'm not sure if that's the guaranteed figure or the overall figure. And it's, but similar enough, like you take soccer, it's like we're signing young left wingers, or it's, you know, or we're not investing in such a thing. It's like teams of certain styles and stuff will trend as their rivals are. Definitely. You know, it's like, so who can get the next Jude Bellingham, or who can get, and like taking risks on, you know, it's, or even
like terminology, like I watched a few games, and I think every pundit is like has a heavy desire to get the expression low block into their commentary. They started with a low block. Like, they all use it, and understanding what a low block, and I think you'd struggle to understand what a low block was by looking at the football pitch when a pundit says it. I doubt that they understand what a low block is. But yeah, I just think as a professional sport gets more and more professional, we punch the standards up, the standards of athleticism grow, but the structure of the game almost deviates from, takes that away. Like if you look at, let's take an example, and again, it's a rugby example. Take Carlos Spencer as an example. Wouldn't work in professional rugby anymore. The game is too structured.
The genius of him.
Like he had to offer. And I just wonder, as we get more and more structured and it's all system based, and it's why players don't work at different clubs, we lost.
Possibly. It's almost like copy. Yeah,
that's quite apocalyptic of a copy Friday and paste, Friday,
isn't it? Like it's, you know, it's like Quade Cooper at Australia was probably what Carlos Spencer was for the All Blacks, like in that, like rogue. Finn Russell at Scotland to an extent, but can play in a system. You know, like it's still structured. Like it, there's no real free flow in play, and like obviously that's rugby. Like you don't see like a George Best or a Pele. Like even Okocha, Messi, those players. Like they're so few and far between. Like that, and but it's happening at grassroots. It's like this is how you play, and it's like get. You know, from a young age, it's like you're taking the freedom and the creativity out of kids. Like, you know, I think, like you said, just let them play. You know, it's, but is it because it's results driven? You know, it's like ultimately it's because it's results driven. It's like, well,
maybe
just win ugly. You know, it's, but it's a strange one though, like the as you say, the complete flip flop of
and the whole league goes all in. But look, we're not going to solve it tonight, Chief. We do have a weekend to look ahead of us. So well, what's your must
disappointing
see TV?
Last week, but must see TV. Six Nations still on the line for us. Ireland against Scotland, 4:45 Saturday evening. Virgin Media or ITV, I think, possibly BBC showing it. Yeah, still a Six Nations to be won. It's not a Grand Slam, but we don't win many championships. So, and it's Paddy's weekend.
Not a Grand Slam or a Triple Crown. That's the one.
We can stop Scotland getting a Triple Crown, though. So.
Yeah. And I personally would be in attendance on Saturday. So if you see me, piss off back to your seat. My must-see TV is a bit more nostalgic. And I'm kind of scrambling, thinking Paddy's weekend. And obviously no more is the GAA Club Championship Final, given the reimagined calendar. But there is a classic throwback fixture on this Paddy's Day of a bygone era. Because it's Paddy's Day here, but it's not Paddy's Day in the UK. And it's an FA Cup weekend. You got Man United Liverpool, 3:30 on Paddy's Day. Get the kids out to the parade early, get them back in. And maybe you disappear off and break your Lenten promise. Point to the black stuff. And a good old classic Liverpool Man United FA Cup quarterfinal. What's more nostalgic and magical than that? And law fail apart.
Two massive, massively Irish supported teams as well on Paddy's weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a nostalgic trip, I think. You can have a pint of stout, throw the kids a bottle of Score and a bag of Tao.
Yeah.
I mean, what
the smoking ban is in. you can see the screen.
The place is full enough. No one know you're smoking. But look, I suppose that concludes this. If you tuned in, if you made it this far, I'd like to wish you and yours very happy Paddy's Day. Enjoy your weekend. Drink safe.
And that's all from me.
Thank you, and good night.